What's up, everyone? You are in the backseat again for episode 5 of the Backseat Sports Podcast. I'm Zach Diodati. He's James Troiano. A subject that's going to be impossible to avoid this week, but first off, James, you had a good week with the news of Jonathan Papelbon coming over to the Philadelphia Phillies?
The boner.
Oh, God.
Yes.
Are you going to call him that for the next however long he's going to be there?
Oh, yes, I'm going to call him that. It's the boner. Every time he closes out a game, I'm going to text you. The boner does it again.
That's
welcome to Philly. The boner.
Where does that come from? I don't understand the nickname.
It's the gift that keeps on giving. So thank you, Ruben Amaro, for that.
Wow. Yeah, Jonathan Papelbon, bad news for me and anyone else that's a fan of someone else in the NL East. But plenty of news, I guess, out of Pennsylvania in the sports world this week. And like I said, impossible to avoid Joe Paterno after 45 plus years, almost 60 on the sideline as a coach in general, fired at Penn State. At this point, we're not going to pretend that we can eloquently delve into everything that has happened there and the gravity of that entire situation. But James, you're from Pennsylvania, and I feel like you could probably have a good perspective on Joe Paterno is a figure larger than life. And he was one of those few people who everyone agreed he can decide when he's going to leave. And so it was going to take something like this for him to get fired. What did he mean for the last several decades to that community?
Well, I'm 26, so last several decades puts me at about 6 years old. So I don't know. Look, I guess I was from the Philadelphia area, mm-hmm. and I have a lot of family that went to Penn State University,
mm-hmm.
and I know that it means a lot to them, but I think everybody at this point is just kind of sick,
mm-hmm.
both of...
Figuratively and literally.
Right. Sick of hearing about it, talking about it, and sick about what happened, because, look, I didn't want to talk about this today, because I think it's very disturbing.
Right.
But at the same time, sure, awareness has got to increase,
mm-hmm.
as to how we can prevent a lot of these things. And I think this situation with Penn State turned into something more than what Joe Paterno thought that it would be. That's not an excuse.
Right.
And
right.
Mike McQueary, the gentleman who saw it, the assistant coach, mm-hmm. that saw this happening, I don't know how you walk out of there and only tell your father and Joe Paterno and not the police. And then later, work with this guy for several years later as a member of his staff. And then afterwards, Sandusky was still coming around the Penn State facilities, and Mike McQueary was there. And that's what's sickening about all this, is that they enabled it. And mm-hmm. I don't think anybody's excusing that behavior except the Penn State students for like one night.
Mm-hmm. It's so... shameful, because the story got more and more disappointing and more sad every day this past week. And at first, the most disappointing thing was all this new information about how many people, you know, some people would like to say covered for Sandusky. I don't know if that's necessarily the right word. I'm not sure if they went out of their way to cover for him, but that old 3 or 4 generations ago mentality in the older part of the U.S., that code of silence among men who work together, it's one thing when you're just getting into minor trouble, the code of silence, and it's another when the well-being...
No pun intended.
The well-being of children is at stake. And it's so disappointing, because it's not just people from Pennsylvania who saw Joe Paterno as this awesome, awesome father-like figure for the game. A father of college football, a Mount Rushmore for college football kind of coach. Everyone who loves college football adored the man. And what's so disappointing about it is you ask yourself, if someone that we felt like we felt about Joe Paterno, if that can happen with Joe Paterno, you know, who do we look up to? It was disappointing to find out how many men turned the other way in this situation. What got even more disappointing is the reaction at Penn State among not just media members, the students, the riots. That was disgusting. The riots on Wednesday night. I don't care how old you are or how mature you are. how can you not just understand this is the way things work? That board of trustees, they had to make that decision. And they gave him some time to step down on his own. But when he tried to be the boss, the man in charge of the situation, and say, no, I'm going to step down at the end of the year, what choice did they have? They said, no, look, sorry, you're gone. And the reaction from the students was disgusting. And from an unlikely source, I saw a tweet from a hockey player named Anson Carter. Not everyone may be familiar with him, but he played hockey at Michigan State before he was in the NHL. He tweeted this week, and this was before the firing. And I quote Anson Carter on Twitter, "I love, in capital letters, my Spartans, but if I had to choose between little kids and the institution that I love, I'm throwing State under the bus every time. Hashtag do the right thing." And that's about as well as you can say it. No matter how much you look up to someone, no matter how much you love your institution, your school, your organization, do the right thing.
Right. Well, I don't think anybody is saying don't do the right thing. And I don't think that those students who everybody saw in the news overturning news vans and burning things and whatever else they were doing, I don't think that's the majority of the student population, how they feel. I think that that was a bunch of drunken idiots running around and chanting Joe Paterno's name just to do it and just to get attention. And I think that what the lesson that we can learn from this, now that it's not over, but now that the initial shock and story is out, is that everyone's human. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we put these people on a pedestal that really isn't fair to them or to ourselves. And we have to realize that everybody has to be accountable for their own actions, and everybody has to be accountable for, if you're somebody like Joe Paterno, you have to be, you're not just accountable for yourself. You are accountable for the institution that you represent, the coaches that work for you, the players that play for you. And somewhere, somehow, during this timeline, that got lost to Joe Paterno.
Right.
And I don't think that his firing was at all unjustified. And frankly, I'm glad to see it happen. And I was, I'm a Penn State fan. And I like Joe Paterno. I liked Joe Paterno as a person before this, but other than the sheer fact that, you know, he's going to go down as a coaching legend on the football field, I don't think anybody can look at him the same way. And I think Penn State has a lot of tough decisions ahead of them, what they're going to do with things like his statue out front and whatever, you know. I think that they had some plans to, you know, name some things after Joe Paterno that, you know, they already have, but this is just huge, and Penn State's going to have a hard time moving on. It's not going to be an attractive place for players to go, and they're going to have to do their best to get a coach in there with high moral character. They're going to have to run a transparent program.
Yeah.
And hopefully the coach can kind of start putting the pieces back together. The mess is just, it's like a huge tangled web of mess, but because Joe Paterno and the Paterno family is so ingrained in Penn State University and their athletics. They have a Joe Paterno class. I don't know if you knew that.
Yeah.
But and you learn about the life and legacy of Joe Paterno, and they are going to have some major decisions to make, and they can't make everybody happy, but they need to do the right thing. And I think you said it best. You know, when you said that.
Yeah. And we don't get into politics at all in the show. It's strictly sports. And this really isn't political, but I think it was on Friday. The president was in San Diego for the Carrier Classic, the basketball game that took place on the aircraft carrier. And again, this wasn't about politics, but I think that someone had asked him to speak about the situation in Penn State. And it was a short statement. And please understand, I don't remember the exact quote, but he said something along the lines of, "We all love sports in this country." And we do. We all love sports and they're important to us, but what needs to be most important is the kids, or he may have said what needs to be most important is human beings. And that's completely true. And we do love sports a lot and they are important to us, but they shouldn't be the most important thing. And we get caught up spending a lot of money on sports, spending a lot of time on sports and investing a lot of emotions, but everything has to be kept in perspective. Like you said, this is going to be a really ugly place for or an ugly situation for a potential player, a recruit to go and play at Penn State. And we're going to take this topic in a different direction in the next segment with another segment of Who Would You Rather? And it's a tough one. Who would you rather play for at this point if you were a college football player, the University of Miami or Penn State? Coming up next on the Backseat Sports Podcast.
To get in touch with Zach and James, email them at backseatsports@gmail.com or reach them on Twitter at @backseat_sports.
That's on Twitter at @backseat_sports.
Okay, once again, you are back in the Backseat Sports Podcast with me, Zach Diodati, and James Troiano. This is another segment we like to call Who Would You Rather? And this week, the inspiration for our Who Would You Rather segment comes from an email we got from Ed in Canton, Ohio, and he asked, who, at this point, would you rather play for, Miami, the University of Miami, or Penn State? And I don't know if the inspiration there comes from the fact that he's in Ohio. Maybe he feels his Ohio State scandal.
Wait. Is that the University of Miami, Ohio?
No.
Or is that the University of Miami, Florida?
Because Penn State would be an easy choice there. I wouldn't go to Miami of Ohio no matter, you know, what was going on at one of the big schools. But again, who would you rather play for? You know, maybe if you're currently on the roster or even if you're a recruit in high school trying to decide where to go. Miami, obviously, as most people who follow college football and even just a sports fan in general knows, big, big scandal that broke just before the season started this year. Involving a booster, a big-time booster named Nevin Shapiro, who is now in prison after being convicted of a billion-dollar Ponzi scheme, and donated a lot of money to the program and also gave a lot of illegal benefits to the players and offered bounties for on-field play, including injuring opponents, paid for an abortion for a stripper that one of the players was involved with. A really, really ugly situation.
All the
stuff
a good friend does.
Right, of course. Yeah, especially in Miami. Yep. You know, that's that kind of town. Now, of course, anyone who keeps up with football, and I think even you and I were talking about it when the college football season was starting, you look at all of this stuff that broke out in that Yahoo Sports report on the situation, and you think, man, biggest scandal in college football history. How can it get... Well, it got worse. It got worse a few months later in Penn State, and obviously really different situations. And on one level at Miami, that's just a really seedy, shady situation, the kind of thing you'd expect from that town. And then on the other hand, the situation in Penn State is just...
hating on Miami.
Okay, well... Scarface Central, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, that's the way things work down there. And then Penn State, this is more of a really sensitive, you know, human story. So
okay, loving on State College, hating on Miami. Okay, just so we got that straight. Okay.
Well, yeah, I have feelings about the University.
So are you trying to tell me that you would rather move to State College than Miami?
Look, I think that right off the bat, if someone asked me that question, mm-hmm. My instinct would have to be Penn State, and here's why.
Oh my God.
Here's why. Miami has a history of making trouble, and they have a history of just not giving a you know what if they continue to make trouble. And these penalties that Miami has coming are still being worked out. They have a history of that happening there. That program has been on the decline for 20 years with the exception of a few great seasons that Butch Davis had an effect on. At Penn State, like you said earlier, there is going to be a transparency coming, and there's good reason to think that gives Penn State less of a chance of getting in trouble program-wise. If you're a player, you want to be able to play for championships, right? And it's hard to play for championships if your program is on probation or banned from the postseason or, you know, bowl games, things like that. I think that the players are going to be less affected by the scandal at Penn State as far as what they can do as a player.
Right. But as far as objectively, who would I rather play for?
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather go to Miami
because
it's Miami and it's nice. And I think that it's going to take State College and Penn State University a longer time to move past mm-hmm. some of this stuff and get their image back. Miami already has this image of being the bad boy school. Everybody accepts it, and nobody really cares. Like something concrete, like we get evidence of something concrete happening, like Nevin Shapiro, and it's like this big story, but then like nobody cares.
Right.
Like a week later it was done with.
Especially at the local level. Like people in Miami really not that angry about it.
Well,
you know,
the players are in the NFL and no one cares if Nevin Shapiro right. gave Vince Wilfork $20,000 while he was in college. Right. Well, now they don't. The only people that care are the NCAA and like Larry Coker.
Right.
And he does, and that's because he doesn't want his reputation damaged.
And Nevin Shapiro came on the scene in 2002, which was Larry Coker's first season as head coach, and a season where they didn't win, but went to the BCS championship game and ended up losing to Ohio State. Choosing between these two programs, I can't help but think about a game from the 80s that a lot of college football fans are familiar with, the 87 Fiesta Bowl when Miami and Penn State faced off. They were both undefeated in the regular season, and Miami, and a lot of people have heard the story, Miami showed up at the game getting off the plane wearing fatigues. The whole team was wearing fatigues, and they were the bad boys. And look, Penn State is
not. Well, Penn State were really the bad boys because Jerry Sandusky was their defensive coordinator.
Right. Well, okay, but Penn State, the most of the nation was pulling for Penn State in that game because it was like, who do they think they are getting off that plane in fatigues, trying to be bad boys?
Yeah. Can we do something real quick?
Sure.
Let's draw an imaginary two columns.
Okay.
And we'll put a check in the column that you like better. So between Miami and Penn State. Living.
The living environment.
How about scenery?
Okay, Miami.
Area.
Miami,
check.
Right.
Okay.
Right, Miami.
Success on the field.
Miami,
okay. Mm-hmm. So that's two for Miami.
Especially in the life of a kid who's 18, 19, 20.
Okay.
Especially then.
Right. Coach.
Well, at this point, Miami.
Yep. Yeah. And I think Al Golden's a good coach.
Right.
And this will depend on who Penn State gets. They're going to have to, like we talked about that earlier, they're going to have to get somebody who is of high moral character.
A little bit.
Urban Meyer.
Yeah, I don't know about that. But, you know, honestly, whoever, and I spoke with someone about this week, and look, if someone comes to you right now, and if you're a coach, and maybe not even necessarily an extremely high-profile coach, if someone comes to you and says, if Penn State comes to you and says, would you like to be the head coach of Penn State? There's some hesitation there. You're thinking, ooh, yeah, jump into that situation. I don't know about that. Whoever takes that job is going to have to be an absolute saint of patience. It's going to have to be something, really, it's going to have to be someone that's really dedicated to being a leader in a very emotionally trying time in that community. And I can't use the word patience enough. It's going to take a lot of inner strength to be the guy, to be the guy who follows not only Paterno, but comes in and everyone's going to look in his direction as the guy who's supposed to fix
that
situation.
Yeah, but now the guy that gets to follow Paterno is, I think that he probably needs to have some kind of connections to the school. I think that would help. Maybe somebody like a sure-to-be-fired Jim Caldwell from the Indianapolis Colts. No, but I think that following Joe Paterno, not so bad now.
No.
It would have sucked. It would have, like, sucked. That dude would have been, like, in trouble in the next couple years if this didn't happen. But now it's like you're going to be the cool guy no matter what because, that crap isn't going on under you. We know that. So you're the cool guy.
If Paterno had gone out on his own terms, and had gone out with just a sterling reputation,
right,
it would have been 0% chance impossible for Penn State to make a splash hire. It couldn't have been done,
right?
Because even if you just whispered a minute ago, Urban Meyer, even if they'd hired him, it'd be like, okay, Urban, show us what you can do in the Big Ten because you just followed Joe Paterno.
But let's be honest, it's not like Penn State's winning anything these days. So the bar is not real high
right now.
I mean, the bar is like winning the leaders division.
Yeah, and you know the leaders. You know what would be? You know what is also interesting?
Is he legends?
Pence, you know, it was a stupid idea to give those divisions just names instead of geographics. So
I think
again,
it's very classy.
We don't know.
Well, let's put a check in Penn State's column for leaders and legends.
Well, listen,
what does the Big East have?
It's
all right.
You're getting off track.
Last check.
Okay.
Chances of playing in a BCS bowl right now.
Miami.
Yeah, Miami. But that has nothing to do with anything that's going on off the field at Penn State. There's just more talent in Miami.
Well, there's not only, you're going to play with teammates who have more talent, but not only that, I mean, the Big Ten hasn't made themselves, as a conference, they haven't looked like the best conference for quite a while. But even then, Penn State faces more challenges with programs like Ohio State, Nebraska, Michigan than Miami does with Florida State. And then honestly, other than Florida State and the ACC, it's just a bunch of other guys who get hot sometimes.
All right. put Miami in the Legends division. Where are they at?
Right now they're not having a good year.
Are they above or below Penn State?
But program wise, look, if as long as you're in the state of Florida, you're at a significant recruiting advantage compared to anyone north of the Mason-Dixon line. A significant.
Like, what do you tell people to like come to State College, Pennsylvania, where it snows 10 months out of the year?
I think you have to recruit kids who don't know any better. I think you have to call them up and say, have you ever been to the South? Nope. Okay, good.
Yeah. Okay, were you homeschooled? Come to Penn State.
Yeah, no. That's about it. But listen, you know what's going to be really interesting to whoever the next coach is at Penn State,
yeah,
they have been in a pattern of forgiveness for not having a good season for about 20 years now. You know what I mean? Joe Paterno could go 7-5 all he wanted because he was Joe Paterno. This fan base has gotten themselves in the habit of saying, no, it's okay. No, it's okay that we didn't go to a BCS game this year because it was Joe.
Right.
So how long will it take for them? How much patience will they have for the new guy who's not Joe? You know, how long will it take them to be like a pressure fan base again?
They're going to have to not have very much patience because,
right.
Well, I shouldn't say that. I think that it's going to take time because Penn State doesn't have very many good players.
Right.
So they're going to need to hire a coach that can get good players because I don't know these guys that Joe Paterno's
Lane
recruiting.
Kiffin.
It's like, yeah, yes. Get Lane Kiffin.
Yeah.
He'll love it there.
That's how you get to clean up a program.
He won't even last one year. I mean,
Yeah, and maybe he can name, he has one son named Knox after the year in Tennessee. Maybe he can name another one of them Station. But coming up next in the Backseat Sports Podcast, we're going to delve into something that we haven't touched yet, and that's soccer. And anyone who follows the U.S. soccer team or the international level of the sport knows that this summer the U.S. Federation made a splash hire of their own with hiring Jurgen Klinsmann. When is the excitement going to translate to results?
And disclaimer, if you do not like soccer, you will like the segment anyway, so stay tuned.
When will excitement translate to results for the U.S. soccer team and Jurgen Klinsmann next in the Backseat Sports Podcast?
If you've got questions, comments, or maybe even some insults, email Zach and James at backseatsports@gmail.com or reach them on Twitter at @backseat_sports.
That's on Twitter at @backseat_sports.
All right, you are back in the Backseat Sports Podcast. We're going to delve into the topic of international soccer, specifically the U.S. team. And after the Gold Cup loss in the final to Mexico this past summer, Bob Bradley was fired as head coach, and Jurgen Klinsmann, formerly of German coaching and playing fame, was hired later this summer. And the results have been less than stellar so far. 6 games, 1 win, 1 draw, and 4 losses, and we've scored 2 goals. And I say we affectionately, because we are all Americans. But James, when does the hype that surrounded Klinsmann in his arrival, he turned Germany, his home nation, to a scoring machine in the World Cup in 06. We've scored 2 goals. How long does that realistically take? Because it could take a long time.
I don't have an answer for you. I'm completely unprepared for this conversation. I thought we were going to talk about the Latvian national team.
Oh,
so I did research on that.
Turns out Latvian soccer, not a big draw. So we're going to go ahead and go U.S. soccer anyway.
No. All
right,
look.
Right.
I think it's fairly simple.
Mm-hmm.
Players.
Mm-hmm.
When you have, you know, players like Miroslav Klaus and
Michael Ballack.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bastian Schweinsteiger.
Right. You have
those guys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you can
score.
You have more pieces to move around.
Right.
No, the issue with the U.S. team these days, and I think it's, if you watch the matches, I think you can pretty much see this from a mile away. They don't have the quality in midfield to compete with these other teams to get the ball to the forwards properly, to allow them. They're not giving them good enough service to do anything with the ball once they get it up there. And what Jurgen Klinsmann is trying to do is to recruit quality midfielders to play those positions. And he's trying to do that by bringing some of these German-born players in, like you've seen Timothy Chandler, Danny Williams, Fabian Johnson, who he's recently brought into the national team mix. There's a couple of other guys, some of the Mexican-born players. just to see if their technical ability on the ball and distribution might be a little better than some of these guys that we've seen under Bruce Arena, Bob Riley, the same old guys.
The scrappy.
Yeah. Scrappy is, look, in soccer, scrappy and physical is a good word for unskilled and bad. Okay.
When you say scrappy and physical, when you're talking about hockey, basketball, or football, people think, oh, great, scrappy and physical. When you say scrappy and physical in soccer, it's a backhanded compliment.
Yeah. It's
maybe not even a compliment.
You don't want to be called that. No. Like, if you're like, you played a real scrappy and physical game out there.
That means you have no finesse.
No skill on the ball and sloppy.
Anyone who follows soccer knows, even before Klinsmann got hired, knows that he loves the U.S. and he already had a home in California before he got hired. And it almost makes me wonder whose expectations were more unrealistic. The U.S. soccer fan who told himself, oh, now that Klinsmann's here, we're going to start scoring and winning. Or Jurgen Klinsmann that told himself, now that I'm the coach of the U.S. soccer team, I can turn this thing around now.
Alexi Lalas and Eric Winalda told me that this was going to be awesome. And so far, 1-4-1, disappointing me with 2 goals. We've lost all 4 games by 1-0.
Which margins. Is kind of ironic because we're sitting here and we're lamenting what's happened since he's gotten hired. But no, there's been no utter domination. There's been no game where we look terrible, and there's been no blowout. Yeah, right. We're losing 1-0 when we lose, which is it's a weird thing to sit here and be grateful for. That sounds like a waste of time to me to just think, oh, well, at least we're not getting blown out. We're not playing strong teams. I think overall, look, coaching an international soccer squad, it is such a lengthy project, and sometimes all this work that you put in for a few years, when you go to the World Cup, that can be gone in like a week, and it's tough. But
look, stop. This is what he can start doing, okay? Right. And this is what he needs to do, and I think he's trying to do this without pissing everybody off. I think what he needs to do is tell the MLS players that you need to be so far above the average MLS player to even be called up to this team. Mm-hmm. That what he's trying to do is, if you don't already know this, he's talking to MLS officials and executives about expanding the season and quality play of the MLS.
Right.
And that includes such things as obviously expanding the schedule, having different types of games, more competitions, playing with different competitions from around the continent, and then possibly he's already been talking about for years, and the MLS is trying to do a really good job of this. They've started to having these developmental academies for the different teams, and the team has their own, and that's commonplace in Europe.
Right, that's something that it happens all over the world.
And it's worked. Some of our best players that are playing now, some of the best American players that are playing now came out of these youth programs, like Landon Donovan's, DeMarcus Beasley, you know, back in the day, and even guys like Shea.
And so the sentiment or the idea is, how much more helpful could that be if they were going to these academies here?
But what he needs to do is he needs to put his foot down and make it clear that while the MLS, the quality of playing the MLS is head and shoulders better than what it was, it's actually watchable now.
Sure.
By foreign soccer fans and by Americans that like a sport with good players. That's why we like the NFL. That's why we like the NBA, Major League Baseball. We know we're watching the best of the best. When you watch the MLS, you know you're not always watching the best of the best. You're watching a second-tier league. Now, what people have to understand, and I guess this has turned into like me defending the MLS, but what people have to understand is that in soccer, there's so many leagues around the world that you can have a really great league, but it doesn't have to be the best league, but the competition can be really good, the skill can be really good, and that's where the MLS needs to get to. Mm-hmm. And I like that Klinsmann is bringing in these foreign players, because I think it helps to mingle him with some of these guys, but I still cringe every time I see Kyle Beckerman in the middle of a midfield with guys like Danny Williams and Maurice Adu and Jermaine Jones and these guys that have played abroad. And they are pretty good on the ball, and they have some good service, even though some of the service that I've seen lately from these guys in passing has been rough. But you can't put a guy like Kyle Beckerman in the middle of that and then expect things to just go smoothly. And yes, this is a transitional period and it's an experimental stage, but you also need to be thinking, who, you know, you need to start thinking about some guys that you're going to be using in some of these competitive games that are coming up in the not too distant future. And I think that the U.S. is in major trouble if they're relying on Kyle Beckerman and
If Jurgen Klinsmann wants a long leash, and if he wants a lot of patience from the Federation with this job, then he has to go to them and say, look, like, what I'm trying to do here is not just coach games. What I'm trying to do here is build a culture around this Federation, and the project of making Americans a deeper pool of talent in soccer is not one that happens in a couple years. It's one that happens over the course of several World Cups, and it's something that happens because, as you said about academies, getting soccer to be a more popular choice among young athletic kids, that's a long project. If he wants that much time to really build everything up, then he's going to have to make the Federation understand, like I said, I'm not just coaching games here. And I'm really pulling for him because he's got an obvious excitement around the game, and it showed when he was on the field when he was younger and when he played for Germany, and it showed when he was a coach in the 06 World Cup when he was on the sideline for Germany. I'm pulling him for him because, look, as much as we may talk about the stigma of what Americans think about soccer and the fact that it's still like fifth place at best as far as the popularity of the sport in America, Americans like when Americans win at anything. So the World Cup, and that's the biggest stage that obviously that we're going to put him on. When the World Cup comes around, people will watch because it's the U.S. against other countries. Michael Phelps isn't popular because people like swimming. Michael Phelps is popular because he wins a lot under the American flag. That's it.
Right. Look, do you think, here's a good kind of broad, do you think that Jurgen Klinsmann took this job to, we know he took it to coach. He mm-hmm. likes to coach. He has a passion for the game.
Right.
But do you think he took it because he knows that he could potentially become a legendary figurehead in American sports? If he transforms soccer from this kind of niche sport mm-hmm. that it's been to something that is in the discussion with these other top American sports, and he can recruit some of these athletes, because the U.S. already does a pretty good job. Look, let's be honest. We already have a lot of major sports here. Football, baseball, basketball.
Yeah, they do well with what they've got.
Hockey. Yeah. And we churn out, you know, guys that played soccer when they were younger. These guys played soccer in high school, maybe college. But they're not always the best athletes on the team. Those guys went on and played football, basketball, these other sports. So I think it's remarkable that the U.S. fields competitive teams like these with the players that we have, because they're not our best athletes.
Because look,
imagine if we had some of these guys.
Exactly. If you were someone who is a strong supporter of like a European soccer team, and then thus, of course, a strong supporter of your national side, it's got to be a little bit, I don't want to use the word scary, but maybe it is a little bit. You watch your team play in the World Cup against the U.S., and they get challenged. Maybe they draw. Maybe they lose to the U.S. And you got to be telling yourself, soccer isn't big in America. Those guys that play for them are not the best American athletes. That's got to be a little worrisome.
We're not trying to take anything away from
soccer.
You have to be quite an athlete to run around.
Of course,
the soccer field for 90 minutes.
Right. We're not taking anything away from the athleticism, but the best American bodies in sports aren't. They're just not on the soccer field. That's just a fact of it right now.
I mean, let's be real with ourselves here. And we have this discussion sometimes. What if we put some of our best guys out there, like some of these guys, like I joked around with some of my friends.
What if Ray Lewis played rugby?
When Chad Ochocinco, when it was the lockout ran around with Kansas City for a little while, Sporting Kansas City, or it might have been Salt Lake. Anyway, one of them. He looked like a giant beast compared to the guys he was playing with. So imagine if we're playing like it's the World Cup mm-hmm. and this is like revisionist history, and we're Slovenia's lining up and they look out and they see Ray Lewis, LeBron James,
LeBron James,
Dwayne Wade.
No, and it's something we're thinking about, but I just hope that someday it even gets close to that point.
I think it's getting there.
To answer your earlier question, do you think that that Klinsmann took this job because he thought that this is an opportunity, albeit a one that might take a long time to become that kind of... Yes, I do think that. There, especially in the athletic world, a lot of men that really succeed in sports, whether it's on the field or in coach, especially in coaching, look, this is to be a great coach, you have to have all the great coaches in any sport. You have to have a drive to compete, a competitive spirit that you can't, you know, satisfy that spirit anywhere else in life. And taking on that challenge, don't think that he is not extremely excited. This is a very unique challenge for a European soccer coach.
Yeah, but I'm getting tired of, like, we lose these games and he's like, comes out with a big smile on his face. We competed great today. We had some great chances. Well, everybody played really great.
You know what?
The defense was great.
I think that
Altidore was great. And you're like, something wasn't great. We lost again. We lost again.
Right. That may be a sign of the fact that he is just going to have a good attitude for a long time.
Question.
Go ahead.
Do you view Bruce Arena as a good coach? Was he a good coach?
He was a stepping stone. And I know that's
not
the answer you wanted.
No, okay. I don't. I want you to answer my question.
Yes, I do.
Was he a good coach?
No, he was a good coach for his time period. But
why was he a good coach?
Because he was the kind of coach who he found a way to win with inferior talent. That's what a great coach does.
Okay,
in any
so
sport.
You view him as a great coach, probably like I maybe do, because you feel that the team that he led in that 2002
right.
World Cup,
mm-hmm,
was a bunch of young players.
Right.
And that Portugal game and the ensuing run.
Mexico, the win over Mexico.
Was kind of, it was like a landmark, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Do you view Bob Bradley as a successful coach?
He was serviceable at best.
Okay, so no.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
What is Jurgen Klinsmann going to have to do to be a successful coach? Because Bruce Arena kind of set the bar when you're talking about where we can get, because we've seen where we can get.
Okay. Look.
And I think that a lot of people are going to be disappointed at where he's going to get, because getting to the quarterfinals...
Look, here's
the round of 16.
Look, here's the mentality.
It's very, very tough.
Here's the mentality that a lot of Americans have trouble with in soccer. When you watch a broadcast and you have foreign commentators and they say so and so, like let's just say, for example, a Champions League game where they play a home and home in the later stages of the Champions League tournament, it's club soccer, and the commentators start the broadcast by saying so and so would love to get a draw here today. Look, that doesn't work for the American sports fan.
Yeah, it does. It does. Yes, it does.
Have you ever told yourself, we have to play kind of good today? We have to kind of succeed.
No, because that's not what they're saying. And this is a completely different argument. So thank you for derailing this.
Okay, look, what's going on?
No.
Look,
he has to win.
What? He has to win.
Okay,
that's
so you
all that matters.
Talk about what you just
no,
said?
Listen,
you just want to...
You asked, what is he going to have to do to be considered a successful coach? I'm sorry, but he's going to have to win. Now,
so what was your rant about going...
Because
for a draw?
Listen, because he can't just be, you know... There are some nations that if they make it to the round of 16, that's the best thing that's ever happened to sports in their country. I'm sorry.
This one.
But, stop. That's not good enough.
For soccer?
For the U.S. Listen... He has to at least, I'm not saying that he doesn't have to win the next World Cup, but
what?
But stage by stage, he's got to be better than the last guy, or to be better than the coaches we've had before. He has to get to the semifinals.
That's the first thing he has. Are you kidding me?
Not kidding.
I don't know why. You're going to be disappointed.
Okay.
Who do you talk to? Like, where do you like get these things from?
If you are a soccer fan, or even if you're not, even if you want, if you're open-minded,
turn your mic off. I'm taking
fan.
Over
Good
from here.
God.
I'm going to
email
commit
us
you.
At backseatsports@gmail.com. James wants
Tell
to know.
Tell Zach how dumb he is.
What? What does Jurgen Klinsmann have to do to be considered a success as the head coach of the U.S. Soccer
and
Federation?
Should Zach be committed to a mental establishment for his remarks?
What does he have to do? Email us at backseatsports@gmail.com. Again, follow us and hit us on Twitter @backseat_sports. That's on Twitter at @backseat_sports.
Urban Meyer.
See you next week. Hey, I got something that makes me want to shout. I got something that tells me what it's all about. I got soul and I'm super bad.